and welcome back to Rumblings from a Rambler. I'm Ron Verdicchio, your host. I'm speaking today with Professor Emeritus and author Dr. Tony Coletta about his new book, Reducing Anxiety and Difficult Behavior in Young Children, which is available on Amazon. So in this segment, we are going to continue our conversation about strategies that teachers and parents can employ to reduce anxiety in young children. Tony, in your book, you write about bibliotherapy. Sounds interesting. All you librarians out there, you are going to love this.
Sure, Ron. Bibliotherapy can be used by parents or teachers, is the use of children's books to help solve personal problems like anxiety. Now, a good reference book for teachers and parents, which is in every library, is called The Best of Book Finder by Sharon Dreyer, D-R-E-Y-E-R. And it's a book that gives suggested children's books, ages 2 through 18. What you do is you look up words in the index, like you might look up children's anxiety or worry or fear, and relevant book titles and appropriate age ranges are listed.
Can you give us an example of a book or books that can be read to a young child who is a real worrier and would be concerned?
Yeah. I really like a book called, quote, A Feel Better Book for Little Worriers by Harriet Brochmann, B-R-O-C-H-M-A-N-N. This book has great illustrations and describes how worries are negative thoughts that can be changed to happy thoughts. Also, the book reminds children that worries can protect them from harm, that worries can be thrown away, and how deep breathing and exercise help to relieve anxious feelings. Other examples of books that are therapeutic and help children cope with stressful events are The 10th Good Thing About Barney by Judith Viorst, which talks about the death of a pet and how to handle that. Don't Feed Me the Worry Bug by Andy Green, which talks about how to address worries when they are small. And A Little Spot of Anxiety by Diane Alber, which talks about how to shrink an anxiety problem before it gets too big.
And your seventh strategy, Tony?
The seventh strategy is really an important one. It's play and playfulness. And I should say increasing play and playfulness in the home and in the classroom. Play is the antidote to anxiety. The amount of playfulness in both children and adults is an indicator of emotional health. Psychologist Gordon Newfield says, quote, the rise in anxiety in both children and adults is due to the loss of play. Play allows children to express feelings in an emotionally safe way. The problem is that real play for young children is being replaced at home and in school by excessive worksheets, screens, and video games. Now, Ron, thousands of years ago, the Greeks realized that emotions come out through play. So they played music, they sang, they danced, they painted, they told stories, they engaged in theater, they engaged in pretend play, and they read poetry. These playful activities were their emotional playground. And I suggest to all parents and teachers out there, what is your emotional playground? Is it filled with a lot of play-oriented activities? Or is it very small and there's very little play? If children and adults lose their playfulness, they feel anxious. The solution to anxiety is more playfulness.
Certainly speaks to the importance of the arts in the schools too, doesn't it, Tony?
Yes, it does.
So what are some examples of how parents and teachers can become more playful or silly?
Well, you're playful when you're lighthearted and lively. You sing silly songs. You pretend to be different characters.
Rawr, I'm a bear.
Just like that, Ron, you're being silly. That's good. You're going to live longer. It's being more positive and optimistic. You focus on the upside to a problem. You make it a point to smile and laugh a lot, especially when around children. Here are some suggestions for increasing play and playfulness in an adult life. Number one, sing and dance more often. Number two, tell and retell humorous stories and past experiences. Three, be more self-deprecating by poking fun at yourself. Four, engage in the arts and sports activities. Five, instead of the news, watch comedies on TV. Six, closely observe and engage in children's dramatic play and participate in their pretend play. I am reminded of the 1997 movie, Life is Beautiful. Recall how a father protected his son in a Nazi concentration camp by pretending that everything was an elaborate game. They were in the middle of a war, and yet through pretend play and togetherness, he made his child feel safe.
So, what are some other examples of how children and adults can become more playful?
Well, young children play when they engage in physical activities like dancing or playing with a ball. Playing games where they take turns and cooperate, or construct things, or draw and play games with rules. Now, dramatic play, which involves taking on a role and pretending, is the normal occupation of young children, and it is the highest form of play. However, some children do not come naturally to dramatic play, and they need to be taught or coached in how to do things like, one, take on a role. They just don't know how to take on a role like be mommy, be daddy, so they have to be taught. Or two, make believe with objects, where a block becomes a phone. Or make believe with actions, where they pretend to open a door that is not there. Or ask questions, like why is the baby crying? Or number five, make up a new scenario, like, oh, the baby's getting sick, what should we do? And lastly, verbally interacting and expressing feelings. These are skills that have to be taught to children who do not naturally demonstrate them.
In your book, Tony, you describe how a parent or a teacher can help an anxious child who has been injured, sick, or otherwise stressed to engage in guided dramatic play. Can you explain to our listeners what that is?
Sure. Well, in guided dramatic play, the adult helps the child engage in pretend dialogue regarding an anxiety issue. By guided, we mean that the adult intervenes in the play by asking questions or reflecting back to the child what is happening. It's kind of like play by play. You may have noticed that adults tend to cope with anxious experiences by retelling the event over and over. When anxious, adults prefer to talk it out. However, young children do better when they play it out. Issues such as separation anxiety, injury, divorce, a new baby, relocation, family sickness can be reenacted through guided dramatic play.
So can you give us an example of how dramatic play can help a child cope with anxiety, for example?
Sure. In my book, I talk about little Sammy, who had a traumatic experience when he was 3 years old. He fell out of a high chair and split his chin open. The doctors tied him up in an immovable pediatric papoose. So just imagine this little three-year-old just all tied up, he can't move, in order to stitch him. It was like a straitjacket. When Sammy got home, boy, was he angry all the time. Now, with the guidance of Sammy's preschool teacher, his parents put together a dramatic play scenario where Winnie the Pooh, Sammy's favorite character, falls off a high chair and the family pretends to rush Winnie to the hospital. Sammy, we have to bring Winnie to the hospital. The parents put Winnie in a hospital bed and Sammy then pretends to rescue Winnie and take him back home, where he then jumps into the arms of his mother. Now, Sammy repeats the rescue of Winnie the Pooh over and over, which gives him a sense of mastery over his anger. For children, reenacting a stressful experience through guided dramatic play is more helpful than talking about it.
So, Tony, why do young children enjoy repeating their dramatic play experiences, even when stressful?
Well, Sigmund Freud says that repetition assures children that there is stability in the world. Children repeat anxiety-provoking experiences through dramatic play because it gives the opportunity to master the experience.
Do you have any other examples for our listeners of how guided dramatic play can help to heal an anxious child?
Well, in another true experience, a mother turned around and for a moment, her 18-month-old daughter climbed up a long flight of stairs to the first landing. The mom was doing something else and she didn't see this. Then mom hears a crash and turns to see her daughter rolling down the stairs. When she reached the bottom, the child screamed sheer terror and pain. Mom tried to soothe her by placing an ice pack on her swollen lip. She took her to the doctor, and fortunately, there were no other signs of injury. Now, a few days later, mom comes home from work and finds her husband at the bottom of the stairway picking up multiple stuffed animals. Her daughter was standing at the top of the stairs on the other side of the closed gate. Dad looked at his wife and said, "She just keeps throwing her stuffed animals down the stairs." It occurred to mom that her daughter had a need to reenact over and over that scary moment of falling down the stairs. As her daughter threw Elmo down the stairs, mom began to vocalize how Elmo might feel. They picked up Elmo and asked him if he was okay. Mom spoke as Elmo and said, "Yes, I'm okay." Then they both took turns holding an ice pack on Elmo's lip. They played this scenario on and off for 2 weeks every day, reenactments that the child initiated. Since the last time they played, the child has shown no fear or distress related to stairs or climbing. Mom says she learned that play is the true language of children.
Very interesting. I would imagine some older siblings could participate in that as well, I would think.
Yes, absolutely, Ron.
So your eighth strategy.
Yes, the eighth strategy is called exposure therapy, which is the systematic confrontation of fear. Now, you can help a child who is fearful or anxious through a process known as exposure therapy, which is the gradual facing of the fear itself in baby steps or small, non-threatening doses. It's like going for a swim in a cold lake. At first, it is cold, but as you wade in, your body adjusts to the temperature and it gets warmer. So, for example, if a child fears the dark, the child can be taken outside at dusk with a flashlight and gradually experience darkness. Or looking at photos or watching YouTube videos can help a child be desensitized to the fear of fires or storms or the wind or earthquakes, hurricanes, or even tornadoes. One child who feared the park and feared swings was first taken near the park. Then the next day was taken into the park. Then the next day was taken into the park to the swings. And finally, the day after that was taken to the swings and he got on the swings and overcame his fear of swinging.
Now let's turn to the school experience. So for many children, they are concerned about going to school. So how can exposure therapy help a child who is anxious about school and the school experience?
Yeah, a lot of kids do refuse to go to school. They're afraid of school for a variety of different reasons. But in steps, a parent, with the help of a teacher, can tell the child that, number one, we're going to drive to school, but you will not be forced to enter the school. Okay? So you drive to the school. Two, we're going to sit in the car in front of the school, take some deep breaths, visualize the fun that he could be having in the school, and engage in some positive self-talk, such as, "I think I can do this." Thirdly, agree to walk into the school with the parent, and just sit in the front office. You're still under no obligation to go into the classroom, but just sit in the front office. And while you're there, imagine being in the classroom. Now, with the help of the teacher, with the cooperation of the teacher, arrange beforehand to have a friendly classmate come down to the office and ask the child to join the class and walk the child to the class. So it's a matter of doing it in small steps.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm not sure the dimension of school phobia in young children, but I would imagine as we are in this post-COVID state, and as you pointed out in a previous broadcast, the conversation that adults have about masks and germs and so on, little kids inhale that emotionally. Mm-hmm. So perhaps in another broadcast, we can talk a bit about school phobics and school phobia. So let's turn to your ninth strategy here today.
Yes, the ninth strategy, excuse me, is coaching the child to engage in exposure therapy. Now, I believe that children under the age of six need to be largely protected from anxiety. We do this by creating strong attachments and closely monitoring their experiences. However, older children, and when we're getting to 7, 8, 9, 10, middle school, high school, should not be overprotected. We should not be removing anxiety by avoiding an activity or eliminating stressful events. These children need to be coached. A child needs to be coached until he or she is able to cope. Now, coaching involves three things. One, having conversation with kids, where you ask questions, you do some active listening. Two, asking questions that push the agenda, such as, what would happen if you raised your hand to speak in class? Three, giving suggestions and encouraging risk-taking. You might say, have you ever thought about what would happen if you went up to a classmate you did not know and said, hi, my name is Corey. What's your name? Now, Ron, let me give you a personal story. I never attended kindergarten. I grew up in New York City, and the school in my neighborhood was a school 1 through 8, grades 1 through 8. So I started first grade at age 5. It was a large class. I was anxious and nauseous on day one. And all through elementary school and high school, I developed anxiety about speaking in front of the class. I never raised my hand, and I froze if the teacher called on me. What I needed and what every anxious child needs is a coach, an adult who tells and shows children how to face an event that makes them anxious. To use a metaphor, a coach shows a child who has fallen off a horse how to get back on. First you do this, then you do that, etc. The coach does not suggest that the child should never ride a horse again. Recall how Mr. Rogers told children who were anxious, quote, always look for a helper, a teacher, a relative, a friend to talk to. You are not in this alone.
Do you have other personal experiences you'd like to share with us today?
Sure. During my childhood, my parents each worked 15 hours a day, had no time to coach me, but I did have a very sensitive fifth grade teacher who knew of my classroom anxiety and suggested that I sit in the front row so the rest of the class was behind me, and she gently encouraged me to verbally participate in the lessons. And that really worked for me. I forced myself and gradually overcame the fear of raising my hand and speaking out loud to the class. I did not grow out of anxiety so much as I learned out of it. A good coach encourages and teaches skills to an anxious child, like, number one, how to self-soothe. So for young children especially, they can self-soothe by learning to sing a song to themselves, like Rock-a-Bye Baby, or to hug a stuffed animal, or to be wrapped in a blanket. Or maybe it's drinking hot chocolate, or rocking in a rocking chair, or deep, slow breathing. Smell the flower, blow out the candle. A coach teaches a child to be strong and courageous by, as we have said, talking back to anxiety. Find a stuffed teddy bear, call it the worry bear. Tell the child that the worry bear is whispering things in your ear to be scared and worried. The child talks back to that bear, you're wrong, I'm not listening to you, I'm not scared. A coach also gives examples of positive self-talk. For example, you might say to the child, repeat this, I am not perfect, but I get better every day. It may take some time, but I can work through my problems. If a child has experienced the death of a close relative or friend or pet, here are three phrases the child can say that helps them and the other feel better. Number one, he or she is now at peace. Two, we were lucky to have him. Three, she now lives through me. When you think of it, a good coach teaches one of the great paradoxes of life, that the more something scares you, the more you should consider doing it. I am not talking about wrestling a bear, but some of the most important things we do in life are scary, like public speaking, like marriage. We need to learn how to engage and conquer.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing those. I want to turn to a different topic in the time that we have remaining in this segment. Are there any natural remedies for reducing anxiety in young children?
Sure. A lot of people practice mindfulness. And when you engage in mindfulness, you avoid electronics, you focus on breathing, you slow your life down, you're more self-aware, and you're more attentive to your environment. In other words, you stop thinking about all the things that you normally think about. Now, depression focuses on the past and anxiety focuses on the future, but mindfulness keeps you in the present. Now, meditation is an important part of mindfulness. It is an especially important anxiety reducer for both kids and adults. And based on all the studies that show its effectiveness, meditation is the best thing to do to calm the mind, train the mind to avoid distractions, and give you control over your thoughts. I mentioned how an overreactive amygdala can get when there is an alarm. Meditation has been shown to make the amygdala less reactive. Meditation increases our ability to pay attention. If you read Dan Goleman's book, Altered Traits, he presents the scientific argument that supports how meditation makes positive changes in the brain. Also, Ron, exercise and yoga, and I know you're a big yoga fan, reduce the symptoms of anxiety, strengthen muscles, and help to free children from tension. If I can give you one other suggestion,
sure,
give all the parents and teachers one other suggestion, for those of you who want to give students and children short physical movements to help alert the brain, have children move largely by crossing the midline. For example, stand up, put arms in the air, then have the right arm cross over to the left shoulder, the left arm cross over to the right shoulder, left arm to right knee, right arm to left knee, to the elbow, toes, and so forth. Things like bear crawling on all fours, the Macarena, the bird dog, which you do in yoga, also stimulate the brain. So crossing the midline forces the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body. Right side of the brain controls the left side of the body. So when you cross the midline with exercises, you stimulate and invigorate both sides of the brain. In effect, you're waking up the brain.
In older high school students, some teachers practice with them brain breaks where they employ what you are suggesting for younger children, for high school age students. And one of them is, you mentioned the midline, is the importance of bringing them back to an activity that brings them back to the midline, which appears to be very calming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for young children, and for 17, 18, and 19-year-olds, and even adults like you and me, these are very calming activities. Well, if anyone in our audience wants to practice some of your strategies with children, what specific things can they do?
Well, they can actively listen to a child's upset, anger, or frustration and reflect the feelings back. They can certainly find a stuffed animal, call it the worry bear or worry monster, whatever you want, and tell the child that this worry monster, this worry bear is the one who's whispering these anxious thoughts to you. Then have the child talk back to the bear. You're wrong. I'm not listening to you. They can reenact problem situations through pretend play. They can practice natural therapy ideas like deep breathing, meditation, more exercise where they're crossing the midline, more playfulness. Playing with pets, too, is very reducing in anxiety.
You know, as we conclude our broadcast here today, I want to just, you know, throw out the fact that, you know, young children are at risk for a lot of things in the world we live in. Of course, we've just been through the COVID experience. We are in the midst of an environment where adults express a lot of anxiety, concern, and anger themselves about what's happening in our world and our society. And certainly, as I indicated in earlier in one of the other broadcasts, what adults say, children inhale. So concluding thoughts you might have here today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think an important concluding thought is to remember that our goal is not to eliminate anxiety, but to help children manage it. But also, Ron, children need to develop resilience, which is the ability to bounce back from a stressful or traumatic event. When a child is anxious, a good first step is to remind him or her of all the things to be grateful for. For example, grateful for a loving family, friends, our home, food, our school, our teachers, toys, TV, music, books. The more we express gratitude in life, the more resilient we become. Those who practice gratitude tend to be more optimistic, less stressed, and overall more healthy. I remember years ago, I always told parents, don't sweat the small stuff. But then again, it's almost all small stuff. And I always like to end my sessions with my favorite story called Elmer's Glue. When my sons were 7 and 5, I walked out to my backyard and saw that someone had squeezed a large bottle of Elmer's glue all over a large rock. I was so angry at the time because it would take me so long to clean up all the sticky glue on this rock. Well, I stormed into the house. I looked at both my sons, 5 and 7. I said, quote, who took a tube of Elmer's glue out to the backyard, climbed up on a rock, and poured Elmer's glue all over the rock? And who is going to clean up that mess? And my 5-year-old looked at me and said, Dad, if Elmer's spilled that glue, then Elmer should clean it up. My sons are in their 40s, but I can still tell that story to make them laugh when they are a little down. Humor is the basis for all good relationships and reduces anxiety. Also, children are the funniest people in the world. The Elmer's glue story emphasizes that we need to remember and record the humorous experiences that children have through the years and then remind them of those experiences when they are anxious or upset.
To view Tony's free videos on topics such as reducing anxiety, managing difficult behavior, kindergarten readiness, self-esteem, and child development, they can go to YouTube.com. Is that correct,
That's
Tony?
That's it, YouTube.com.
And then what?
And type in the 3 words, parent, teacher, associates. Click on my picture and about 50 videos will pop up.
Let's just run through that one more time for our listeners. So if you want to view free videos on the topics we discussed today and some others, go to YouTube. And if you would just say that one more time.
Yeah, just type in the 3 words, parent, teacher, it's parent space, teacher space, associates. Again, over 50 videos will come up. And they're short videos. They're 3, 4, 5-minute videos. You can watch it very quickly on a variety of different topics related to parent, teacher, child relationships.
Tony, I can't thank you enough for coming to our studios, visiting with us today.
It's been a pleasure, Ron.
I think that, you know, there is a lot here for parents and teachers to unpack, to dissect, for teachers to put into their toolkit. You know, hopefully what will happen moving forward is that teachers will listen to this broadcast or broadcasts and incorporate strategies that will be helpful to young children, placing those strategies in their toolkits. Parents, hopefully the same. I want to thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
For giving up your time. Again, your book is available on Amazon. And You have been listening to Rumblings from a Rambler, hosted and produced by Ron Verdicchio, recorded at Shared Universe Studios, Homedale, New Jersey. This is a Two Adirondack Chair production. Children's background voices courtesy of Sound Factory and music rights purchased from premiumdeep.com. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next time.